Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. This is Bob Barber, your host here at SAT Radio, SECAM Tech Tribe. We have another great law class for tribal courts presentations, pre-recorded. And the instructor was Judge Naidu. Before I start that class, does anyone have a question, a comment, suggestion? Just press one. I'll wait a few more seconds here as people come into the show here. Anybody has a question, comment, suggestion, please press one. And I believe Laurie is now on the air. Go ahead, Laurie.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Okay. How you doing?
Okay.
That's good.
Are you getting excited about Colby?
Getting excited? What do you mean?
About monetized Colby.
I've always been excited.
Yeah.
The greatest thing on earth, greater than sliced bread, greater than a paperclip, greater than a safety pin. Greatest thing on earth. Everyone should sign up right now so we can get a payout.
Oh, it's coming. It's coming. People are coming.
Oh, yes.
Spreading the word like wildfire.
Wanna
get people in.
Yes, it's great. COLB is of course, the certificate of live birth, but the monetizing of it, monetize COLB, that's the program that very few people really understand. But the sounds of it would really overcome that misunderstanding or not understanding it. Just sign up for it. That's what it's all about. Just sign up for the Monetize COLB program. Help us all out here. Help yourself out. Make this a better world. What do you think, Lori?
I'm praying.
That's the best thing to do. Anyone else have a comment, a suggestion, question? Just press one. Well, I guess nobody else has questions here, Lori. I'm going to go ahead and start this class. I'm actually waiting for this class. It's good and want to learn more. So here we go. It's called Latin Maxims Contracts 2.
We'll finish off the Latin Maxims and go into a very interesting topic for today, Introduction to Criminal Law. Okay. Let me pull up my Latin maxims here. Latin maxims. If you got them in front of you from last week, we'll just go through that, finish it off.
Right. So that's the Latin maxims of contracts, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. It's in the file section on triballaw.tk. It's the last file.
Hi, Jason from Jersey here.
Yes, so we stopped at contra preferentum, that the words or deeds are where the terms of the contract work against the person who made it, simply because there was no meeting of mind. Okay? So we stopped there. And 99.9% of your deed of trust, your sale and purchase, will fall into this category. You didn't know. You didn't ask. You didn't complete the sequence of a meeting of minds. So
you're now at the mercy of the other party. Now, the judge, unfortunately, this part of the world, and when I mean this part of the world, I mean the United States, the judge doesn't really become a referee or a umpire. That's the role of judges all over the world. But in America, unless and until you raise a certain defense, raise a certain issue, raise a certain point, the judge just sits there like television on a wedding night. He's supposed to be the umpire. He's supposed to be the referee when people object, when counsel object, but they just sit there, which is very odd. They just sit there like they are uninterested, disinterested, not motivated. And that's very strange when we go to their courts looking for justice. That'll never happen in America, I guarantee you, unless you go to a court of equity, an ecclesiastical court, or a tribal court, where we look at all the facts, not isolated facts. We look at everything. What was the intention? What was the act? What was the deed? What did you say? What did you think? What did you expect? What did you anticipate? What did you convey? The idea of communication is to successfully, amply, adequately, satisfactorily transfer a thought from one mind to another. That's the whole idea of communicating in speech or in word or through images or through pictures or through photographs. The whole idea is to convey, to transfer a thought from one mind to another. So, verba chataram fortius acupuntur contra preferentum. The fella who made the contract without a meeting of mind and who bulldozed his way or her way into a contract, it works against that person. So when you come across an addition contract, an unfair contract that only favors one side, you raise the contra preferentum defense. Now, these are time-tested Latin maxims that have been in use for 800-900 years. They are the pillars. They are the foundation. They are the basis of all law. Began from common law, judge-made law. But these maxims are more towards equity. They're not just judge-made, but most of these maxims come from the scriptures. Okay, if you look at the scriptures, you will see what it means to make a bad deal or to enter into a faulty contract. Okay? So, contra preferentum, make a note of it. Now, the next maxim is verba debent intelligi cum effectu. Words ought to be understood with effect. In other words, when I say parking only on Sunday, and I did not say you're not allowed to park on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays, I need not say that. Because my word, right, ought to be understood with effect. No parking on Sundays only or parking on Sundays means you cannot park You cannot park there on any other day other than Sunday. Well, you didn't say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Well, it says parking only on Sundays, or Sunday parking only, or Sunday parking. Okay, so the words ought to be understood with effect. Now, if there was a proper meeting of minds, then the words ought to convey to an investigator or to a referee or to a judge or to an umpire what both the parties expected, anticipated, and what they discussed. And this is where parole evidence comes in. P-A-R-O-L, parole evidence. This is something that was not in the contract, but other people who were present can give evidence and say, well, this is what they talked about. Parole evidence. Mm-hmm. In other words, something that was not written in the contract, where there was an ambiguity in the contract, you bring in parole evidence to say this is what they talked about, but this is not what they memorialized in writing. I think, Tom, you can come to terms with that, can't you? Parole evidence?
Yes.
I think most of us can. You know, you rent a house, you buy a car, you buy a house. You know, what was the intention of the party? Animus homina est animus scripti. Remember that?
Right.
Intention of the party is the soul of the inn. So what was your intention? I intended to let you live here month to month to throw you out whenever I want to throw you out. Well, did you say that in the beginning?
Nope.
I thought month-to-month meant every month I pay a rent. Why the hell do they call it a month-to-month lease? I don't understand that. Why don't you just say, hey, I plan to sell the house, but I want to make money. I believe, you know, I should have the cake and eat it as well. So I go ahead and rent the place, but I can throw you out any time. Now, what kind of a deal is that? You move in on the 49th day, the landlord or the landlady comes and tells you, that's it. It's a month-to-month contract. You got to get out.
She's backed off.
She what?
She has backed off.
Oh, really? Why? Well,
I'll tell you about that.
When you challenge title, they'll all back off.
Yeah, that's basically, I think, what it was.
No, seriously, I can prove that it is in Indian country.
Yeah.
The Ohio Valley, way back in 1812. It all started in 1812, 1815, right up to 1835. The Ohio Valley was all Indian country. They crossed the Appalachian Mountains. They allowed them to come in. Get involved in agriculture. The savages are not involved in agriculture. That's one of the greatest lies ever told. Why are they called the five civilized tribes? They had agriculture. There was hunting, fishing, farming, gathering. They didn't need money. They didn't need private property. They all lived with a communal sense of togetherness. Today we have gates and locks and what have you. In days of yore, people trusted one another because they lived as a community. You know? So, oh, by the way, I wanted to start the day with a word a day. today's word is philonoist. Let me spell it out for you. Philonoist. Send me a tribal law. Somebody say hello in a tribal law Skype and I'll spell it out for you. Tribal law, there it is. Philonoist. A lover of learning, a searcher for knowledge. Welcome, Philonois. We will use this format every time we meet. I'll teach you or show you a new word. You want another one?
Yeah.
This might make your day. Octoguild.
What?
Octoguild. An 8-to-1 payment for injury. Aha. Octoguild.
Octagonal 8.
Yeah, octo, right.
8-to-1 payment for injury. The only state where this worked was Vermont and Delaware.
Huh.
But not opto, octo. I have written it on the tribal law thing, Sandy. OCTO. Octoguild. 8-to-1 payment for injury. Ain't that nice? Aha. Moving on. Where were we? Yes. Verba debent. Intelligi cum effectu. Words ought to be understood with effect. Because it's with words that you convey and transfer a thought from one mind to another. The next one is closely connected to it. Verba intentionae non e contra debent in severi. Words ought to serve the intention, not the reverse. So what was your intention? You think of something. Now you want to convey your thoughts to somebody. So what do you do? If you know sign language, that's different. But usually we convey it with words. So words ought to serve the intention. So remember that when you are entering into a relationship in contract, the words must serve the intention. And then the next maxim, also connected to words, in verbis non verba sed res et ratio quaranda est. In words, not just a word, but the thing and the meaning are to be inquired into. What was it that the other person was trying to convey to me? What was the question I did not ask? What were the words for which I signed away my life? Like when you buy a house or you buy a car. You buy a car in 2015 and you take a 7-year loan, by 2024 you're still paying the 2015 price. They do not give you a prorated price as the depreciation works. How nice. In a perfect world, you buy a car for $50,000 and within a few months you pay the prorated cost or price or worth of value of the vehicle. But that's not so. Bought a $50,000 car, 15 to 20% depreciation every year. 3 years, 45% has depreciated, but you're still paying for the 50,000. Business as usual. Scam as usual. So we look into the words of the contract, into the agreement, into the memorandum of understanding. I like to call it a memorandum of understanding because first you examine, then you analyze, you read, you decide, you know, and now you understand. That's why I prefer to call it an MOU, Memorandum of Understanding. We both understand what we both expect out of this contract or agreement, Memorandum of Understanding. Mala grammatical non vitiati shartam. Bad grammar does not vitiate a deed. Missing a and a the, or using, I mean, let's take for example our bad grammar. Talk about bad grammar. Look at our preamble. We the people, in order to create a more perfect union. Perfect is already perfect, but they wanted a more perfect union. That cuts both ways, folks. It just tells you that the Constitution needs to be continuously amended because we haven't achieved perfection yet. We haven't really achieved a more perfect union, have we? We've still got poverty. We still got businesses killing people. We still got banksters killing home buyers. We still got securitization going on. We still got bad cops killing good people and good people killing bad cops. We got all kinds of stuff going on. Yeah. And lastly, well, not really. We still got a few more to go. Always remember, ex abundanti cautela, out of an abundance of caution. You don't like a deal? Move on. Go to another fella. Always remember that. Out of an abundance of caution, care, concern, beware, caveat emptor, buyer beware, venditor emptor, seller beware. Cuts both ways. Now, the next one is a very interesting maxim. Intentio in severi debet legisbus, non legis intentionae. Look at what it says. The intention ought to be subservient to the laws, not the laws to the intention. So what was the intent of the legislator when he passed a law? Supreme Court keeps talking about the intention of the legislature. How do you know what they were intending if their words do not serve the intention? See that? No state shall deprive a person of due process, equal protection of the clause, 14th Amendment, Section 2. Why didn't they say no person shall be deprived due process of law, equal protection of the law? You see the difference there?
Yeah.
What was the intention? They put the state first. But the state is only there because the people agreed. The people consented to be governed. So why don't you say no person shall be denied? So the intention is the source of the law because you intend, you think, you then verbalize. Okay, we need to make a law to prevent Wall Street from cheating people. Okay? That's our intention. So let's call it the Dodd-Frank Wall Street reform and what shall we call it? How about this? Wall Street reform and consumer protection law. Yeah, that sounds great. Okay. I once sued a bank under this Dodd-Frank, and the federal judge asked me whether this law allowed a private cause of action. I said, absolutely. And she turned around and said, no, it doesn't. And then I said, all right, let's look at the law. It doesn't say there's no private cause of action. But she made sure that she wanted to prevail, and she said, no, it doesn't call for a private cause of action. Then I said, why do you call it the Consumer Protection Act, Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act? Who's going to fight for the consumer if not for the consumer? Even if the consumer hires an attorney, a bar card attorney, what do you mean there is no private cause of action? Oh, she said, I said, yeah, there's nothing in the act. It doesn't say that. Your dishonorable judge, your honor, you know. Oh, okay. Tell your client to amend the complaint. So the poor fella lived in that house for 5 years without paying a mortgage because he questioned the securitization. And finally, it went through three other judges. And finally, another standard moron magistrate judge came into being. And he dismissed the whole case and said, that's it, you've got to pay. Didn't want to listen to reason, didn't want to listen to law. And by that time, of course, the client ran out of funds, and we had to get him a $20 million judgment through a tribal court. But this is what happens when the intention ought to be subservient to the laws and not the laws to the intention. The Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act is very clear that Wall Street must reform itself. Then they turn around and say, oh, wait, just a moment. There wasn't a congressional inquiry. I mean, it doesn't give rise to a private cause of action. Welcome to America, where demonization, victimization, terrorism, economic terrorism, legal terrorism, judicial terrorism is alive and well. And we, the people, do nothing. Heck, we don't even have 50 people signed up for the police force.
Come on, we live in a country of cowards.
Yeah. Did you say cowherds or cowards?
Cowards. They don't got nothing between their brain or their legs.
I hear you loud and clear. Moving on. Convention privatorum non potest public jurae derogare. Sounds like an Italian cursing somebody. That's an agreement of private persons cannot derogate from public right. This again goes back to, you know, you enter into a private contract with a car dealer or with a mortgage banker, and then you take it to a public forum. Now it becomes public knowledge. Ah, this guy couldn't pay the mortgage. All this happened because there was no consensus item in the beginning, no meeting of the minds. O pacta private jurae public non derogare. Private contracts cannot derogate from public law. Public law is public law. The next one is in contact, in tandem with Article 1, Section 10, No state shall impair the obligation of a contract, convention, et modus, vincit legem. A contract and agreement overcome the law. Why? Because it was the intention of the parties that became the soul of the instrument. The law comes next. The law doesn't force you to enter into a contract. The law doesn't put a gun to your head and say, go buy a house, go buy a car, go buy a vacuum cleaner, go buy a lawnmower, go buy an oven toaster, go buy an oven, go buy a refrigerator. You, as the consumer, initiated the deal. Your intention, your contract, your agreement, your act overcome the law. Ex nudo pacto, action non oritur. No action arises on a contract without consideration. Now, this was the famous Red River decision, where Jerome Daly proved there was no consideration. The bank did not put up any money. I put a down payment. Where did the bank put up any money? And the bank representative said, oh, yeah, it was a bookkeeping entry. So without consideration, $0.05, $5, $5,000, it's called a nudo pactum. Credit River decision. Thanks, Tom. I keep saying Red River. And that was a Pembina, Little Shell Pembina treaty, Red River.
Okay.
Every time I see river, I think Red River. It's like that COLB, monetizecolb.org.com.
Right.
So consideration is very important in any contract. When someone says you can buy a car zero down, there was no consideration. It's not a contract. Take the car and go. Challenge them in a court of law and say, hey, no money was put down. It's not a contract. The next one, nil facit error nominis cum de copere. An error of name makes no difference when it appears on the body of the instrument. For example, you're suing somebody, you're suing a bank for mortgage fraud, unjust enrichment, failure to disclose, securitization, and then you realize after you file the motion that Fannie Mae, Federal National Mortgage Association, is the ultimate plaintiff successor in interest. But then you put Midlands Bank, for example. It doesn't make any difference under this maxim. An error of name makes no difference when it appears on the body of the instrument. Because the body of the instrument is talking about mortgage fraud. And all these plaintiffs, you know, one buys the mortgage note from the other, from the original lender. You sue the whole lot of them because they never told you. So remember that. And the next one, there are many, many more, but basically, these are the ones. Quotas in verbis nulla est ambiguitas, ibi nulla, ex potio, contra verba expressa fiande est. Where there is no ambiguity in words, then no exposition contrary to the express word is to be made. So, if it says, I promise to pay you so much money by this day, there is no ambiguity. Because if the words are very clear, I promise to pay you this amount of money on this day. That's it. That you don't need to say, well, I meant that, and you meant this, and they meant that, my thinking was this, and your thinking was that. And no. When you said, I promise to pay you on this day, or no later than this day, this sum of money, that's it. There's no ambiguity. absolutely no ambiguity, no ifs, buts whatsoever. The bank, for example, can say, well, he promised to pay, and, you know, we did this, and they did that, and he didn't do this. Yeah, but federal law says I'm supposed to ask you what happens to my mortgage note in the qualified written request. You never answered it. Your only answer was to file a motion to dismiss, which is what these idiots do all the time. Motion to dismiss, 12b-6. You ask them 100 questions, they file a motion to dismiss. And that's the answer to your QWR? Oh, come on, people. We need 30, 40, 50 million people taking these guys to court. The problem is nobody wants to make any trouble because they're paying the mortgage. Mortgage. Debt grip. Don't want to fight. Well, I may lose my home. I may lose my nest egg. What about losing your rights while you're maintaining your nest egg with payments that should not be made in the first instance because they have cheated you? One swallow doesn't a summer make. So we need 30 million swallows to say summer has come. We need 30, 40, 50 million people to say this is wrong. Judge, this is wrong. But we don't have the numbers. Burden of my song. Neither here nor there. Questions before we go into criminal law?
Well, two of them seem to be in contradiction to each other.
Which one?
Convention privatorum non potest public iure derogare, and convention et modus fixunt legum. Well, the first one seems to say that you can't make an agreement about something that's illegal. And this convention et modus fixunt legum says whatever agreement you make is legal no matter what the law says.
No. The first one, convention privatorum non potest public iure derogare, it what that means is an agreement of private. In other words, the English translation is not really 100%.
That's probably why I picked up on it.
Yeah, I checked this from the Latin dictionary. What they mean to say is a private agreement cannot get any help from the public right. An agreement of private persons cannot derogate from public right. So if you decided to make a contract or enter into a relationship with a car dealer or a mortgage banker or a manufacturer of a particular household product, and something went wrong, you cannot bring that into, you should not bring that into the public domain. In other words, did you ask them for the guarantee and warranty? You remember we talked about that?
Oh, yeah.
A guarantee comes with the product. A warranty is an extension of the guarantee outside the prescribed time limit.
Right.
So if you failed to come to bring about a meeting of the mind, you know, like, for example, I remember when I first bought my Dyson vacuum cleaner, the early models, this guy said, oh, you can keep it running for 5 hours, it won't burn out. Now, that's a pretty strong statement. And I said to him, do you really think I'm going to stand there and vacuum my house for 5 hours? What do you think, I'm crazy? I'd rather swing a golf club. He said, no, you asked, you know, how long it will last. You can keep it running for 5 hours. I told him, no, that's not what I meant. If I vacuum my house every third day, will it last me 5 to 10 years, the motor? He said, oh, yeah, absolutely. I said, yeah, but the warranty says no more than 5 years. Oh, it does? See, but the question was asked. So now, if the thing breaks down after 3 years, I have a cause of action. If it breaks down after 12 years, I have no cause of action. But the fact is, he said it should last you 5 years, no problem. But this is a 12th year. What do you expect? You want the Dyson to last you a lifetime? Unless they say, lifetime guarantee. Now you buy me. Now I'll buy everything. Give me a lifetime guarantee, I'll buy it. So basically, that's what it's saying.
Okay.
And then the convention at modus vincens legem means a contract and an agreement overcome the law, meaning if you intended, decided, understood, agreed, knew that you're getting into a deal, that act on your part and on the part of the other party overcomes the law. In other words, the whole gist of this is buyer beware. Whatever you're going to buy or enter into a contract, it overcomes the law because it was your act.
Okay.
Your act, which was the result of your intention. Which brings me to the ultimate question. Do you have a contract with your government? Implied or expressed? So I sent a notice out today to monetize COLB to make a bumper sticker. I have no contract, comma, implied or expressed, comma, with the government. Think about that. I have no contract, comma, implied or expressed, comma, with the government. Make that a bumper sticker.
Okay.
And that will be a good segue into criminal law. Any questions before going into criminal law?
Yeah, I have one, Judge. This is Tony from Quebec. Since the contract and agreement overcome the law, can we say that the contract and agreement between two private parties makes the law? Can we say that?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
What that maxim says is, if you decided to act on your intention and created a contract, that overcomes the law, because the law is only made to impose a sanction on certain conduct.
Okay.
So the law of contract really is a guideline to help the parties come to terms without having to go to court. Because really, if you look at Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution, no state shall impair the obligation of a contract. If A decided to cheat B, that's between A and B. Why do you take it to a private, to a third party? So these maxims are really telling you, out of an abundance of caution, be careful that you do not get trapped in a situation where you are going to lose money or you're going to be injured.
Okay.
So, always remember, let me finish this thought, then you can jump in.
Yes.
Always remember, nobody forced you to do anything. Go ahead,
okay.
Tony.
Yeah, so basically the contract is kind of a way to of a clarification of the law, right? When you enter into a contract, well, you establish a contract, of course, but it also serves as a way to clarify the and making sure that both parties agrees on the interpretation of the law and agree to it. Both parties agree to it.
Exactly. So you both agreed.
Okay.
But what did you agree? Did you agree not to involve a court of law? You see?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you take, for example, the Constitution Act of Canada. Okay?
Yes.
Now, the Constitution of Canada, the Constitution Act of Canada, says the provinces of Canada, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, have expressed a desire to be federally united into one dominion under the crown of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Ireland, with a constitution similar in principle to that of the United Kingdom. Well, that for me is rubbish, because the United Kingdom doesn't have a written constitution.
Right.
Okay.
You know, so the Constitution Act of Canada starts with a wrong premise. And then it says, and whereas such a union would conduce to the welfare of the provinces and promote the interests of the British Empire, it doesn't say anything about the people. Third paragraph. And whereas on the establishment of the union by authority of Parliament, it is expedient not only that the constitution of the legislative authority in it provided for, but also the nature of the executive government. Where the hell are the people? Then it goes on. It shall be lawful for the Queen. Oh, really? You're in Canada. What do you want to do with the Queen?
Yeah.
So unless it is otherwise expressed or implied. Now, this is chapter 2, Union, part 4. The name Canada shall be taken to mean Canada as constituted under this act. There's no such thing as Canada. It's Kanata. K-A-N-A-T-A. Even there they lie. The name Canada comes from Kanata, which is an Indian name. Never says anything about the people.
Okay.
Nothing about the people. It just goes into the Queen, the executive, members of Parliament, representation of the provinces, qualifications of a senator, terms of a senator, vacancy in the Senate, House of Commons, Quebec, Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, nothing. It's as if the Constitution is written solely for the purpose of forming a government by politicians. Nothing about the people. I'm at Article 59, 58, salaries of the Lieutenant Governor, Article 66, Lieutenant Governor in Council. Look at this. Ontario, there's nothing about the people. Read that thing for a while. It's scary, man. Where do the people figure in here? And then in Article 91, Section 24, it talks about Indians and lands reserved for the Indians. So, that's a frightening prospect. Then you got to look at the 1982 Canada Act Constitution. So, was the contract signed between you and the government of Canada? No. Is it implied? Yes. So what are you going to do about it? Like Revenue Canada. The first case I handled in British Columbia, in Kelowna, long time ago. I asked the court if my client had a contract with the government. And the other side said they came up with the most bizarre of all questions. What do you mean by that? Saya tanya sama lu, kalau saya ada apa-apa rancangan dengan engkau. He said, excuse me? I said, I spoke to you in English. You didn't understand. I'm speaking to you in Indonesian Malay. I thought you may understand. Does my client have a contract with you? You should say yes or no, or I don't know. And the judge said, yes, 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 yes. Okay. And I said, Your Honor, what does that mean? Is there an answer to my question? I'm asking a question. That's my job. My client's basis is he doesn't have a contract with the government. Why is the government coming to tax him? Can you show me? I'm not asking for legal advice. I've got the 1867 and the 1982 thing here. So finally, when they conceded about Indian rights, I jumped in and said, okay, he's got Indian title. He cannot be taxed. Then they wanted to question my license. I said, I'm a member of the international bar. I can practice in any part of the world I want, with leave of the court, of course. And Your Honor had given me permission to practice. They immediately filed a motion to disbar me. That was their defense. So, where were we?
Where to go to criminal law?
Let's move
across. We are already in criminal law.
Oh.
Okay. The first thing you got to understand in criminal law is the craziest phrase I've ever come across in the English language. That is probable cause. Probable cause. Now, probable cause means reasonable grounds for the policeman to have stopped you. Before I can even qualify and define probable, now I've got another word, reasonable. What is reasonable? Is it reasonable for a policeman who hasn't had a single traffic ticket issued that day? Is it reasonable to stop somebody whose car doesn't look very clean, car looks very dirty, the guy who's driving the car looks scruffy, he didn't shave his beard in 10 days. That reasonable grounds, probable cause, could be a bum, could be a thief, could be casing this property, could be drunk, could not have a driver license. Maybe his tabs have expired. Let's stop this bum. That's probable cause, reasonable ground, because probable cause, reasonable grounds mean there are apparent facts, probable, apparent, reasonable, which means there is no absolute certainty. So on mere suspicion, what is Todd, the police officer, a psychiatrist? Mere suspicion. I don't know, I didn't like the way the guy was looking at me, and, you know, I must stop him. So now they stop you and say, hey, your traffic, your turn signal is not working. Oh, okay, officer, I'll have it fixed. Yeah, I'm going to write you a ticket. No, no, no. Officer Todd doesn't do that. He stops you. He tells you to open the trunk or the boot. And he finds 50 kilograms of crack cocaine. Aha! My suspicion was right. Now, the probable cause, the apparent fact, the reasonable grounds, without any absolute certainty, for stopping you was because you had a faulty turn signal light, right? What has that 50 kilograms of crack cocaine got to do with probable cause because he stopped you on the grounds that your turn signal wasn't working? Was it lucky that he found the 50 kilograms of crack cocaine? Then he tells himself, okay, good. Anytime I ski a crappy guy with something wrong with the car, I expect to find crack cocaine. So now probable cause takes a different degree of suspicion. Aha! That guy must be carrying something. I better stop him. Then you pop the hood or the trunk or the boot, whatever. He finds nothing. He hates you because he found nothing. He's going to give you hell. He's going to complain about your seatbelt. He's going to complain about your lights. He's going to complain about a lot of things. Because you did not carry any drugs. Probable cause. Now, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution says there will be... Let's look at the Fourth Amendment, shall we? Let's bring it in. Fourth Amendment. Let's see what it says. Let's go. Let's read it. It says, the right of the people to be secure. The right of the people, not a privilege. A right is as powerful as an immunity. To be secure in their persons, how in effect. Against unreasonable searches. Now, the cop came up with a reasonable ground. His reasonable ground, based on suspicion. The Fourth Amendment is not based on suspicion. Are you with me? It says the right of the people to be secure in their persons against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. It doesn't say may not be violated, shall not be violated. Mandatory, not discretionary. So why the devil does reasonable grounds, probable cause? How can probable cause take precedence over the Fourth Amendment's right of the people to be secure against unreasonable searches? Hey, you stop me because of my traffic light. I may have a corpse in my trunk. I may have 100 kilograms of crack cocaine. You stop me because of a faulty light. Why the hell do you want to search me? Oh, that's my job. It's not your job, Todd. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches. You're unreasonably searching my car because I got a faulty light. That's not my opinion, Officer Todd. It's the law. It's called the Fourth Amendment. Now, let's talk about probable cause. And no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation. Oh, I didn't have time to go looking for a magistrate. I had to apprehend the criminal. No, Todd. You stopped him for a faulty light. Turn signal. You are supposed to get a warrant because of probable cause. It says that in the Fourth Amendment. You got to get a warrant supported by oath or affirmation, which particularly must describe the place to be searched, the person or things to be seized. So probable cause is nothing but a bunch of horse manure. First of all, it's an unreasonable search. Secondly, he doesn't have a warrant supported by oath or affirmation. Do you know why they added the word oath or affirmation? Because the Bible says you shall not take an oath or deliver an oath or say or swear to anything under an oath. So an affirmation is enough. Let my A's be my I's be my I's and my nay's be my nay's. So probable cause, apparent facts, reasonable grounds, no absolute certainty, is nothing but horse manure. Are you able to put up an argument with the police officer? Do you have a copy of the Fourth Amendment with you? Excuse me, officer, what are you trying to look for? Open your boot, open your trunk. I want to look at the back of your car. No, do you have a warrant? Okay, he's tougher than you. He's got more guns than you. He takes you to court. He's got to deliver you to a magistrate within 24 hours. What do you tell the judge? Your Honor, he violated my Fourth Amendment rights. He didn't have a warrant. He didn't have probable cause, and this is an unreasonable search. That's what it says in the Fourth Amendment, Your Honor. And it says right here, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, effects, against unreasonable searches and seizures. He seized 8 guns. It's an unreasonable stop, unreasonable search, and an unreasonable seizure. He didn't have a warrant. I am not going to plead for nothing, Your Honor. I'm not going to plead guilty, not guilty, nolo condendo. You got to dismiss this case, Your Honor, because they've violated the Fourth Amendment. You don't have to remember the Fourth Amendment. Just if you're traveling anywhere, just take a copy of the Bill of Rights. Doesn't take much. I mean, you got 8 guns, 50 kilograms of crack cocaine and cops in your body, so what? It's carry a piece of paper. There are only 7 articles and 27 amendments. What's the problem? Know your rights. The second thing you got to remember when a policeman stops you is nemo tenitur prodere sipsum. Okay? Nemo tenitur prodere sipsum. See that? Don't open your mouth and say anything. Just keep absolutely quiet. He asks you for something, show him the Fourth Amendment. Don't say anything. Nemo tenitur pro dire sipsum means you don't have to open your mouth to put your foot into it by saying the wrong thing. Now, even before he can do that, show him Escobedo versus Illinois. You're supposed to have a lawyer present. Remember that? Everything begins with a stop and frisk and search. So that is the crucial point when your contract begins or ends. If your bumper sticker says, I have no contract, express or implied, with the government, that's it. The guy tries to arrest you, why don't you arrest him? Yeah, but I was alone. Don't go alone. Always travel in four or five. Bible says, if you're going somewhere, don't go alone. Have a witness. Arrest the guy who's trying to arrest you. Yeah, well, I don't know if I'll get into trouble. Well, then don't drive a car. Don't go out. Stay indoors. Love your Stockholm syndrome and enjoy your fear. Why even learn law? You're not going to apply it anyway. So don't open your mouth. Keep the Fourth Amendment with you. Keep copies. Give them copies of Escobedo versus Illinois. You've got to have a lawyer present. Don't open your mouth until you come in front of a magistrate. That's when you open your mouth. Now, don't think your freedom of speech with the police officer is going to work. It's not going to work. That's why they always say that stupid thing. Anything you say can be used against you in a court of law. Words, words, words. What did I do wrong, officer? Uh-oh. What did I do right, officer? What did I do wrong? So, try not to open your mouth and say anything because you're not going to win. Remember that case? There was a woman recently, I think about a couple of weeks ago. She was stopped by a cop. She was smoking a cigarette. The cop says, stop smoking. She says, I'm in my car. I'm smoking in my car. What's the problem? Pulls her out, arrests her, and she's dead by the time she was brought before a magistrate. Remember that case? Terrible. What rights do you have anymore in America? I tell you what rights you have. You have a right to arrest the police officer for unreasonably stopping you and violating your Fourth Amendment rights. Look at your Fourth Amendment. Read it up. It says very carefully. Even if there's probable cause, he has to get a warrant. Common law has said you don't have to. Common law says you don't have to. There's a question here. What was the citing of the right to have a magistrate present? What versus what? Don't understand the question. What was the citing of the right to have a magistrate present?
Escobedo versus Illinois.
Oh, the right to have a counsel present.
Right.
Escobedo versus Illinois. Not.
Escobedo versus Illinois, yeah.
Escobedo versus Illinois. It's on the Monetai COLB thing, Sandy. Okay.
I'm just looking at tribal law. It's not there, but I'll get it there.
Yeah. Escobedo.
Escobedo.
You can Google this.
All right.
So, there we are. Probable cause, uncertainty, apparent facts. Reasonable and probable. What a joke. Not only are we attacked and assailed by one ambiguous word, but we have got two. Probable cause. And reasonable grounds. What's good for the goose, good for the gander. What's reasonable for one need not be reasonable to me. Any questions so far? Before we go into... Yes?
Yeah, this is Jason. Now, when you give no consent to the authority and power of the state of police, and they deconsent you and violate you, what makes them suffer from mens rea?
Well, I'm going to go into that in a little while. Mens rea and actus reus. Now, we've talked about intention in contract law. But intention plays a big role in criminal law. Now, in criminal law, for you to be charged for a crime, hang on a minute, somebody is trying to say something. Okay, the most important thing in criminal law is actus non facit reus nisi mens sit rea. Can you all see that? Actus non facit reus nisi mens sit rea. In Latin, it means the act is not criminal or blameworthy if the mental element is missing. Actus non facit reus nisi mens sit rea. So, let's talk about mens rea. If you kill someone as a result of strategic planning and tactics and you execute the plan to kill and you kill this person,
premeditation.
You have done two things. You have completed the mental element and the conduct. Mens rea.
Premeditation.
Is the mental element, and actus reus is the conduct or the deed or the act or the action. Now, mens rea, not era, mens rea. So, in other words, they call it malice aforethought or premeditated murder, murder one, capital punishment. in some states, California, Texas. So if you planned it, you carried it out, you have completed the element of a crime, elements of a crime. Mens rea, actus rea. Now let's take another incident. Another example. You're backing your car and you kill your neighbor's child. You knock your neighbor's child. You didn't see. That's homicide, but it's reduced to manslaughter because only the act killed the child. You did not premeditate. You didn't plan. You didn't have malice or forethought. Even if the child was Dennis the Menace. So actus reus and mensit rea play a great role in criminal law. Now, mens rea basically is intention. You remember how much intention plays a part in civil law, contract law. Can you imagine what it plays in criminal law? I got a question for you. Don't answer me now, but send me an email. Okay, listen up, everybody. Everybody ready?
Yep. I am.
Yeah.
I am.
Okay, how many do we have, Tom?
Let's see. We have 17.
17, okay. I need all 17 to email me. Think this through, and here are the facts. A guy enters somebody's home. He plans to kill this fella. And he fires 6 shots into the person who's fast asleep. Time of murder, 9:30, okay? A fella goes into someone's home, plans to kill him, fires 6 shots into him, time of the killing, 9:30. Got it?
Yep.
Yep.
Good. Now, the next day, they discover the body. Body is taken to the mortuary. The pathologist examines the body and finds the 6 bullets that were fired at 9:30, but concludes that the person died of a heart attack at 7 p.m., 2 hours and 30 minutes before the 6 bullets entered the body. Question I have for you. The fellow who fired the shots, is he guilty of murder? Don't answer now. Send me an email. Get the facts together. Again, a guy goes into someone's home, fires 6 shots into a sleeping, into the person who's sleeping. 6 shots. Time the fatal shots were fired, 9:30 p.m. Postmortem reveals that the person who received the 6 shots died of a heart attack at 7 p.m., 2 hours and 30 minutes before the 6 shots were fired into him. What is the culpability of the fella who fired the 6 shots? Is he guilty? Is he innocent? Email me, okay? Everybody got it?
Yes, Doc.
I expect yes, 17 emails.
Email for Dr. Jag.
Yeah, Dr. Jag.
Okay.
49@yahoo.com. Don't send me in any answer right now. Think this through.
Yeah,
6 shots into the body, 9:30 p.m. Postmortem says he died at 7 o'clock, 2 hours and 30 minutes before the 6 shots were fired. What is the culpability of the fellow who shot the 6 bullets into him. When is it due? It's due within the next few hours. I want to see how much of this you have grasped so that we can go forward. Okay, just look at the facts. Okay, facts are very simple. 6 bullets, 9:30. Postmortem says 7 o'clock. Died of a heart attack. What's the culpability of the fellow of the shooter? So to speak. All right. Questions other than this question. We've gone through probable cause, apparent facts, no absolute certainty, reasonable grounds, Fourth Amendment, actus reus, mens rea, Fourth Amendment, bumper sticker, I have no contract, express or implied, with the government, and we have learned a new word, philonoist, searcher for knowledge, a lover of learning. And we also did octoguild, 8-to-1 payment for injury. Questions? Concerns? Okay. All right then, Tom, everything okay?
Yes, everything's okay. Okay.
You got my email about the new coordinates. We'll talk about that.
Yes.
All right, folks. Have a great, great day, weekend, and everything. For me, it's work as usual. Thank you, everybody.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
Good night, sir. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks, Tom.
Well, that was the second Latin Maxims contracts. Anyone have a question or comment or a suggestion? Go ahead and press 1. Well, since there are no questions, comments, or suggestions, I'll end this episode. Till tomorrow night, we'll present the third Latin Maxims contracts. Thank you.